Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, we're back. It's another week has gone by. Friday is here. They seem to pop up ever so often. Anyway, last time we ended speaking about past lives
and ancestors.
And as is my wont, I pulled a card to see what shall we talk about. And of course, got something so ludicrously fitting. So this is a bit of a left field mind warp, this tarot deck. It's called the Mushroom Tarot.
Oh my goodness.
It's absolutely exquisitely, wonderfully psychedelic. I came across it completely and utterly by chance. So I went on Twitter, which is not a place I go particularly often.
No,
I do have a Twitter account, but just as a total aside,
I must follow you.
Oh,
I never go on Twitter.
Very little point in following me on Twitter because, well, I don't know actually. In the blurby stuff that if you want, so you know how things work in that world for me is I take a picture, I post it on Instagram, Instagram posts it to Facebook.
Yeah.
If you want to do that to Twitter, you have to sign a thing that says, I can't remember if it's Instagram or Facebook, I think it might be Facebook, you give Facebook permission to post on your behalf, to like and unlike other accounts, and to like and unlike other accounts, for fuck's sake.
Yes.
So there's no way on little frozen testicles, frankly, that that's happening. And so nothing much of mine ever makes it to
Twitter,
unless it's a you can sign this thing to make the world a better place,
yeah.
In which case I will share it to Twitter because most things give you the chance. Mm. Anyway, for some reason, I had arrived on Twitter where there are some accounts that I do absolutely love. So they are mostly accounts of women who live just down the road. So it's quite funny. Yes. Old Weird Britain is Elizabeth, I think that's what she's called. Is it that? Or is it something about folklore? Anyway,
always.
It's E.J. Baldry, who's the fairy harpist and an amazing sort of fairy mythologist, really into her old and weird wonders. I can't remember. That might be someone else's account. I'm awful. I'm sorry. I just don't pay enough attention to it to really know what I'm talking about. And the other one is Terry Windling's wonderful account, which they're both just glorious. And I go on there and catch up what has been happening with those two. And then Twitter, of course, desperate to sell itself to you all the time, will say, ooh, you might like this one.
Mm-hmm.
And by some pretty short rabbit hole, I arrived at this place where a man called Chris Adams had just set up a Twitter account. I think I might have been his first follower, or certainly he had less than five followers. I do think I was the first. But he had just released a thing called the Mushroom Tarot. And I was like, oh my God, two of my favourite things, mushrooms and tarots. I'll look at this. And it turned out to be this really extraordinary, beautiful, managing to be bizarrely in the style of the kind of so well-known Crowley deck. The artistry and in the form of a, you know, fairly standard tarot and yet completely full of mushrooms, fungi, fruiting bodies, mycelial bodies and creatures and be kind of groovily psychedelic in a very pleasingly sort of 70s sort of a way, which is an aesthetic that I really like, even though it's kind of not
you didn't have to live through it though, did you?
Well, I was a kid.
The avocado baths and the beige walls.
Oh, no, yeah, we had that. Yeah. Not us personally, I don't think, but I definitely went in a bathroom with an avocado bath. Anyway, that is a tremendously long ramble to recommend you very much. It's mushroomtarot.com. It's well worth a look. It's hilarious. It was very expensive. I got Fergus to buy it for me. For my Christmas present, so it was like 50 quid or something, but it's so cool. Anyway, so long ramble. The car that I have pulled for us is very much in encouragement of us speaking about the ancestors, past lives and all that, because it is a card that doesn't appear in a traditional tarot deck. It is the hyphy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is speaking to the way in which all things are connected. Because right. The hyphy...
It's the mycorrhizae type thing. Is it the root fungi?
It's the mycelial, the hyphae are the links in the chain of the mycelial fibres. Mm.
Right.
And so it's the teeny weeny bit inside the rooty bit that connects everything.
Yes, yeah, so in the tree roots that connect them to other tree roots and
So it's the mycelium that connects the tree roots. Right. So there's most of the connections made under the forest floor are, as I understand it, and I am no biologist, I can't say that loud enough. I am not a biologist, this might be rubbish, but as I understand it, the roots themselves are all connected by thousands of, maybe even millions of miles of mycelium. So it's not the actual roots.
Right.
It's the connecting network is fungi.
Yes, I did know. Yes, okay. The connecting network is the fungi. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, so the hyphae, the tiny, weeny, 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 weeny bits that connect us all, that are underground, so it's the underworld, so therefore it's kind of speaking to the ancestral realms and past lives. And yeah, so what does your camp make of past lives, Maggie?
Well, the Pharisees believed in them in the time of Jesus, and there are two remarks to Jesus from the disciples which strongly imply that it was around at the time. There's the classic one, which is, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?
Oh.
And Jesus says, none of them sinned. He was born blind to prove the kingdom of God, or something like that. I don't know. But
is that somebody Jesus then made unblind?
Yes.
Right.
But we don't, you don't know if that bit was added in later. You really, really can't tell. But the question is valid. And also, Jesus says to the disciples, who do you think I am? And they say, some say you are John the Baptist reincarnated. Well, John the Baptist had only just been killed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was implying a reincarnation outside the steps of time.
Mm.
And other people say about Elijah. So it was all there.
Mm.
And if you look in the Bible, you can see genetic roots whirring through, the karma that comes through. Jacob gets his karma for deceiving his father, and all the way through, you just see that what goes around comes around all the way through the Hebrew Testament. However, the religion has denied it.
Right.
Because if you have reincarnation, you get another chance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think reincarnation is about punishment or reward. I think it's about experiencing everything.
Mm.
And, you know, certainly learning from experiences. And that's not gonna work in a religion that wants you to be good and believe certain things so you get to heaven.
Well, it also makes heaven potentially a very, very, very distant thing after many lifetimes, presumably.
Yes, eventually you. Everybody says you stop reincarnating because you ascend. And I look at this in the holistic world today, all these people who are talking about ascended masters, and I'm sure there are ascended masters, but people talk about, this is my last incarnation. I'm going, oh, come on. Oh, please. Apart from anything else, if you've got to the stage where you don't need to incarnate again, you're at the level of somebody like Jesus and you would choose to come.
Yeah, would you not? Surely if you got to that, you'd become a bodhisattva and come back for the rest of us.
Exactly. If you're going to be that clear and that good, you really, really want to spread that light.
Yeah.
So, no, Christianity doesn't go for reincarnation, but old Christianity did.
Okay. So the radical Catholic Church does or doesn't?
Radical. Oh, you mean the liberal? Liberal.
I don't know. Your lot.
My lot.
What are they called?
Most of them do. Yes.
Most of them do. Right.
Most of them do, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah?
I'm more interested in this line you spoke about yesterday, because you think people do go through the bloodline. I think that's probably entirely likely.
Yeah, I mean, so that's not... I'm not sure at all, but it seems to me, from all I have seen and all I have experienced, both personally and in healing journeys and ceremonies on behalf of other people, it seems, or it feels like, there are particular thread. So this actually is really married to the what's mine to do stuff as well. And it feels and seems to me like there are particular threads that go down lineages of a particular flavour of maybe of work to do, or sometimes a particular flavour of wound, or a particular kind of story that gets repeated over and over and over again down a lineage. And that, from what I've seen, it seems to me really likely or possible, and I guess because I don't have it seems like my mind's not very modern, and I just don't have any difficulty with holding two opposing things as being true at the same time.
Yes, and so, that's classic Peter Abelard. Yes, that's Christian.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Okay. that maybe what we call reincarnation and what we're calling ancestral wounds, ancestral trauma, the ancestral field, maybe they're the same thing. And that because matter cannot be destroyed, it can only be transformed, we're made out of the same stuff, not necessarily exactly and uniquely and specifically, but generally speaking, the world today is made out of the same stuff as the world yesterday, the world tomorrow, the world 2, 4, 6, 8, 10,000 years ago, a million years ago, blah, blah, blah. All the same stuff is here in different patterns all of the time.
Yes.
And so if the energetic threads are the assembling and reassembling of this same stuff over and over and over and over, then to my way of thinking, in a way, how can there not be reincarnation? But at the same time, you cannot ever stand in the same river twice. And so how can it be suggested that the same piece goes on and on and on and on in a way that's highly unlikely? But the same theme, the same learning, the same pattern, the same family of pieces, that it seems really likely that that could go on and on and on. And that it seems like the most possible and potent way of carrying that is through the inheritance of birth and death and birth and death, and therefore of our bloodlines. And so therefore, it seems to me, this is probably terribly messy logic from the point of view of an academic, but that a therefore comes out of that, that means that probably our past lives are within our bloodline.
I would imagine they may dip in and out, but it makes perfect sense to me. And I take it slightly differently in the Kabbalistic term, which is that we have group souls, which are soul families. And you will work with souls within your group soul, because the idea is that there is a perfect horse, there is a perfect human in the mind of the divine. And all the Adam Kadmon one, the human one, is the one. Every single human is one cell in the body of Adam Kadmon. So every human will perfect, and then the great divine baby will be born, and then the universe wraps itself up and goes and does something else. So you're part of one aspect of Adam Kadmon. Your soul group will return to perfect that aspect. So you might have a soul group which is primarily a teacher's soul group. Or primarily a nurse or a medical, not medical, but do you know what I mean? So there would be a soul family that would keep incarnating together. So it would be perfectly logical for that to become a physical family too, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Either or both.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm sure I told you the story about what I'd learned in the Life Between Lives session about my mother. Have I not?
I don't know. There was some part of that. Until you said about my mother, I thought the answer was yes, but now
well,
I don't
okay.
know.
Well, okay. I had this Life Between Lives session, which is based on Michael Newton's book, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, where you're regressed in hypnosis to before you were born.
Yeah.
To the life review and why you came back this time and what your work is to do here. And I was given this session by a lady who was training, so it was free, which is probably the only reason I did it, I confess. And I thought it took 40 minutes and I wasn't going to be terribly impressed, but actually I was there for 4 hours.
And were you terribly impressed?
I was a lot more impressed because it taught me, it made sense of a vision that I'd had previously. And it made a lot of sense of my life this time round, my ex-husband. And that's private, so I'm not going to say what I was taught about him, but I can talk about my mother because I'm intricately entwined with her, certainly. But what I was shown, and now this is important, it doesn't matter if it's true or not, it was what I needed to be shown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think sometimes you think it's past life, but you're shown something from the Akashic record from your family, which is yours to deal with now.
Yeah.
Whether you were that soul or you're an intricate part of that soul or something, this is your business to deal with now. But what I was shown in this was that my mother was a suicide in a previous life and that it was partly my responsibility because I'd gone off to the First World War to fight when I didn't have to.
Right.
And was killed. I went, you know, the sort of glamour.
Were you her son?
No, I was her husband.
Ah.
And it flipped back to something I'd had. The first aromatherapy session I ever had with a really wonderful woman. There were 3 seconds in that session, which will take me 2 minutes to describe to you.
Wow.
Which is suddenly I was in a tent. It was the First World War. I had a nurse and a doctor trying to get my jacket off me. I was face down. I knew I was a captain with the horse artillery. I knew we'd gone down in fire. I remember trying to get my revolver out of my holster to shoot the wheeler because both his legs were broken, and the horses were screaming and the mud and the dirt. And I knew I was dying. And I remembered my wife and the names of my 2 sons.
No.
And the house where we lived.
Yeah.
And that all happened in that. And I was there. Now, I don't know if that was me, or I don't know if it was the Akashic record.
Well, or it could be somebody in your
family.
Family. Yeah.
Well, yes, because I did some research. And there was a member of the Bucknell family who went off to the First World War and died in horse artillery. You know, so that was, coming back, that was ancestral.
Yeah.
Something there. And the life between life things was that the wife, Maisie, killed herself.
Wow.
And I don't know if it's true, but part of my job this life was to keep my mother going. And bloody difficult she made it sometimes too. The amount of times I've gone, God, I can kill the woman. Yeah. But the job has been done. My aunt and I both came back to do that job and we're not quite sure why. And it doesn't matter whether the previous thing is true. The message from that life between lives was so profoundly important, which was you are here to do a job for this woman who was effectively betrayed and wasn't strong enough to handle it.
Mm.
So this woman is going to be betrayed in this life, which she was. Her husband was unfaithful and then left to my dad. And therefore, this woman's got to get through this life with betrayal. And she's got to survive it, and you've got to be part of that. So I think whether it's reincarnation or ancestral, I think it answers the question. I agree. You know,
there's something going on here. Yeah, totally. And that, to me, that whether or not it's reincarnation, ancestral, or merely a metaphor for today, matters not even a tiny bit.
No, it doesn't matter. It's not about your ego, whether you were there, whether it was you. It's about the work that is here to be done.
Now, today, that's ours to do.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As usual, the vicar and the witch agree. Who could have guessed it?
We're slight going off in different directions. Yes, and I think... Again, you're right. It just comes back to what is mine to do right now in front of me now.
Yeah.
And what is not mine to do?
Yeah.
And we're getting so tired up. The people who are having to homeschool at the moment, that's not theirs to do. What is theirs to do is to create an environment where those children will remember this time that they learnt to love nature and they learnt more important things. That's what I'd say was theirs to do. I think.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. I think absolutely.
Every child needs more than anything else in the world is happy parents or carers or the people who are looking after them. So a child that's stressed out of its brain about homeschooling with a parent that's stressed out of its brain about homeschooling, it can't help anyone.
No, of course not. I had such a lovely conversation yesterday I had to go to town because I had to get my eyes tested. And
had to?
Well, in theory, yeah, there was a question as to whether or not I'd been getting headaches because maybe my prescription had changed, which I was reasonably confident that was not the reason I was getting headaches. Turns out that my prescription hasn't changed, and it hasn't changed in absolutely years. And I'm sure the reason I'm getting headaches is because I, firstly, keep forgetting to drink enough liquids. And secondly, I just think these are headachey times. Anyway, that's all by the by. While I was getting my eyes tested, I met the loveliest, kind, jolly person who was the optometrist, ophthalmic person?
Optician.
He was an optician.
Posh words.
Who, you know, when people are completely and utterly okay to be in their field, drops you into that place of completely and utterly okay. He was wearing his mask. I was wearing his mask. There was
my mask.
There was no part of what either of us was emanating from our animal bodies that said, I'm not okay in being in this little room with you. Mm-hmm. So it was nice. It's not like walking down the street where you get people skittishly skirting around you if you look a bit dodgy or witchy or unmasked or whatever it is that their problem is. Bless them, that I don't mean that horribly. It sounded horrible and I don't
know. It was horribly. Just a throwaway in, the story. That's the kind of thing that people get picked on and shouted at, but it was just a throwaway in the story. I know that. Exactly. Go on you go.
So anyway, there he was, all lovely, being kind and nice, and clearly a very grounded human being, not living in fear. And we got around, of course, to talking about coronavirus and two children. And he said that he has three children, because I was saying they're the ones for whom I feel the sorriest and on whom I think the greatest effect is potentially going to be had. And he looked really surprised at me. He went, really? And basically, his experience was his children didn't give a rat's ass. They thought it was great that they were off school. And in his opinion, it wasn't affecting them negatively in any way. But then he went on to describe typically how he comes home from his day's work, gets clamoured all over by his three children. There's cuddling, there's kissing, there's tussling, there's lots of touch and love and laughter. And then there's sitting down to dinner and hearing silly anecdotes about all the people that he's had a conversation with that day. And I just thought, wow. So in your house, there is love, laughter, support, no fear, no physical restrictions.
Communal eating,
blah, blah, blah. How lucky are your children?
Yes.
That's beautiful. And thank heavens for you and all the people like you. And I can't remember where I was going with this, but it just made me so happy that there are still people out there managing to give their children a life where stress and fear haven't become the norm.
Yeah. And of course, children, just like the rest of us, are self-medicating with
telly.
Yeah. And I know two children now, a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old, teenagers, not children. And they're on Netflix till 4 o'clock in the morning, and their parents have tried to stop them, and they've just gone off to the other parent who doesn't care so much. You know, these are broken marriages. And this addiction of just watching something till 4 o'clock is a trauma response that needs to be dealt with, because I need to get out of myself. I need to get into something else instead, because I'm not handling this. And you're quite right to come home to have a dad come home and cuddles and joint meetings. I didn't have that, not in the time of the plague. I love in the time of the cholera, isn't it, basically? But when I was a kid, you didn't eat with mum and dad in the evening until you were 12.
Wow, Maggie, you are older than you look.
I know. I'm more than 12. But of course, by the time I got to 12, I didn't want to eat with them.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So I never had supper with my parents.
Wow.
And I'm sure that had quite an effect because I never talked to them about school. I never talked to them about my day. They never talked to me about their day. I don't know if they would have done.
Mm.
But it just simply didn't happen. So, and I had distant sort of seen and not heard grandparents as well. You went round for official teas and sat there and didn't speak until you were spoken to. So I did kind of know what it's like to have a childhood without that much love.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, I've recovered.
Yes. Ouch. Yeah.
But everybody's... Actually, that sort of is relevant because everybody's life that they live now is relevant to who they are now. And every little aspect of the childhood like that is relevant to who they are now.
Of course.
Is their astrology, as are their biorhythms, as are their ancestral karma, as are this, as are that. And yet we all queue up at the doctors for exactly the same medicine, but we're so different.
We are so different, but we're also part of a unified whole.
Yes.
And that's one thing that we haven't said yet that I want to say about the amount of grief and tear shedding that there has been at this time and seems to be needed to be at this time, which is that it's easy to forget while we furiously connect to Netflix or Facebook or whatever it is, that whether we're actually focusing on it or not, we are indivisibly interwoven with all of the rest of life.
Mm.
And so, of course, we're in grief.
Mm.
Of course we are. Mm. You know, even the ones whose dad comes home and hugs them and kisses them and loves them and speaks to them and all the rest of it, they too are interwoven with all that is.
Mm.
And therefore, there are big things in the field.
Yeah.
And we are affected by what's in the field, whether we're paying any attention to it or not.
Yes, we are. We're more affected when we pay attention to it, I think, but we are affected without a doubt. And the thing about the internet and the TV is it just goes in through those boundaries without our even knowing that they're there or they're not there.
Yeah, but it does mean that when we all turn up to the doctors needing whatever it is people go to the doctors for, I mean, I'm assuming you're referring to things like antidepressant pills and all the rest of it that half the world's probably on right now.
Yeah.
That's...
Treating the unified field.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the unified field, you know, we're back to that practice and we're back to boundaries and indeed to the hyphae and the mycelial roots because we are all interconnected. Everything anyone does has an effect on everything.
Mm.
But it can only be the right and good effect if you're doing what's yours to do.
Yeah.
And you've only got any power if you're awake and alive and paying attention in the here and now. And your reach is only your reach. You know, if you make it into a very mechanistic metaphor, what's yours to do is only within your arm's reach. And you can't be paying attention to, you know, the third sycamore on the left 4 miles away. You can't fucking reach it.
Mm.
But you can be paying attention to the tiny little 2-inch sapling that's by your heel.
Yes.
And that's
enough.
That's enough.
Because somebody else is dealing with
the
tree.
Power is. Yes. Yeah.
And that's enough. Yeah. And I think we're feeling overstretched, we're feeling afraid, we're feeling bullied.
Mm.
And also there are so much different views from the definite deep, deep, deep conspiracy to the my aunt's just died of COVID, don't talk to me about conspiracies and I'm getting the vaccination, you know. And they're both so polarised from each other that we've got this bounce back in the middle and people in the middle are feeling torn.
Yeah.
It's really hard to maintain a neutral stance. And I'm saying, I don't know, so often now.
Yeah. Well, how can we know?
No.
You know, for a start, neither you or I is a doctor. We're not a doctor. We're not a scientist. We're not an expert. And we live in the beautifully, beautifully accurately named post-truth times.
Yeah.
So we don't fucking know because we're not science on this end. And we don't fucking know because who knows whether what we're being told is the truth or not.
Yeah.
Really, we have no idea.
No. And even if it is true, it's affected by the person who tells it. Yeah. Because everything is affected by the observer.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, because we're all filtering what we believe to be true. Mm. And if you are in any way to do with, I mean, this is perhaps a bit of a bleak view, but if you're to do with the media or government, how you present what you believe to be true is to a degree going to be manipulated by what you want the outcome of that being true to be.
Yeah.
And so truth has always got to appear in inverted commas, it seems to me.
Yeah.
But what's ours to do amongst the bloody mess that is, surely, is to look after ourselves and be respectful of other people. And so even if you're the person that thinks, you know, wearing masks is a silly waste of time, please just wear it for those who think it's that you're making a terrifyingly abusive
yes
life choice to not respect them sort yeah. of thing. That was a bit of a convoluted sentence, but I know what you were trying to say. Yeah.
Yes, I know what you're trying to say. Just be kind.
Yeah. But that in that world where we can't possibly know what the truth is, there are going to be, of course there are going to be, some really conflicting and overwhelming emotions, of which grief and anger are surely going to be raising their heads big time.
Yeah, this is going to bring up inherent grief and anger as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's before we even start looking at the bigger picture of climate collapse, extinction, global heating, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, I do not wish to put any imagined disrespect in that blah, blah, blah.
No.
But it, you know, there's so much to weep about.
Yes, we are in a world of complete overwhelm.
Yeah.
And we have to underwhelm ourselves.
Yeah.
We are the only ones who can do it for ourselves. A lady on the mystery school, which I do every Tuesday night, studying Kabbalah, was saying it's difficult for her. She's in lockdown with family and they're driving her crazy with all their views. And she's trying so hard to take a neutral stance. And you could see she was getting run ragged by it.
Mm.
And you just had to go back to the very basics. Are you starting your day with a little bit of private time? Mm. Have you got a place that you can go shut the door on? Well, I don't like to shut the door. You've got to shut the door.
Be the bramble.
Yes. Every now and then, you come near me, you're going to get a little nick.
Yeah.
I need this time in order to be sane for you.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I need this time in order to be sane for me, then I can be sane.
Sane for you.
For you, yeah. Yes.
I'm just sitting here listening to you. I'm seeing that actually the bramble of last time and
the high fae of
this time.
Yes, they're connected.
Really, really, really are connected. Yeah. Not just in all the kind of obvious physical ways, but also in that way that is, if you're taking care of your boundaries, then one of the other things you need to be looking at that's not so obvious is what is the work that is yours to do around your ancestral lines and around your inheritance. And by that, I don't mean go and become suicidally guilty because your ancestor was the one that invented DDT or whatever.
Or kicked the Jews out of England or something.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. But instead, how can I look back to what I have inherited? How can I see what I've inherited in me and offer it healing? So that going forward, I am not simply enacting the wound and I'm not repeating the pattern. Mm. Because that's always our work to do, no matter who you are on any given Friday in January or February in 2021. Part of your work is the healing of your ancestral lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
We're at 33 minutes. That'll do very nicely. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you so much for your kind comments and questions. And keep the questions coming in because they're lovely. We really like to respond to questions. Well, actually, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we go, God, am I going to answer that one? But that's just as important. I'm always saying to people in groups, the day I have to say I don't know is the best day for me.
Yeah.
Because A, I'm being honest, and B, I've got something to go and look up and research and sit with.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.